This is Chatter on Books, because everyone should have a podcast. And here's your host, Victoria, or as we like to call her, Tori Clyde.
Okay, guys, this is almost week two of coronavirus. This is Chatter on Books. We are so glad you're listening to this. We're socially distant. We're trying to be appropriate in these really, really challenging times. And so thanks to Claude, we are doing this via Skype. I have no idea how this will work out. We have lots on tap for this evening. I hope we can bring it to you. And in no particular order, I've got David Aldridge with us this evening. God bless David Aldridge. Michael is in other parts of the world with his family, and there are a lot of challenges with small children and dealing with all of this. So Michael's not with us tonight, so we won't have an update on Station 11, which terrified me anyhow, so that's okay. We're going to do a spotlight on indies because we care deeply, deeply, deeply about our local independent bookstores, including and especially One More Page Books in Arlington. And we're going to have Lelia Nebaker, whom you all know, with us for a little bit to talk about what they're doing and how they're trying to stay afloat in these challenging times. We're going to talk to Michael Sands, our dear friend. I have a lovely glass of red wine. We're going to talk to him about what's going on over there. And our featured author is Zach Smedley. For months and months, every time I go to places like One More Page or Loyalty or EC Books, I say to them, we are getting terrific authors on this show, but I'm failing in the YA category. I'm failing. And everyone kept saying to me, you got to get this guy, Zach Smedley. We finally got Zach Smedley. Who is a very hot YA author with a really, really interesting, fascinating book called Deposing Nathan, which I am going to strongly recommend during these challenging times people should get from their local independent bookstore because it's a really terrific read. And then finally, in Deserted Island, we're going to do what I call Angels and Demons. And David is really going to be put on the spot here because it's going to be a pop quiz. I reached out to some of our previous featured authors and I said, okay, I want you to tell me, during this craziness, and we're all socially distancing, or we should be socially distancing, Charlie Sun in Ann Arbor, Michigan, I'm speaking to you. In these challenging times, and you got plenty of time on your hands to read books that you've acquired at your local independent bookstore, what are the books you should be reading versus books that you want to be reading? So we've got some featured authors we've had on before who've given me their choices for Angels and Demons, and I'm going to read them, and David is going to try to guess. Who selected those books. And if Lelia and Zach can stay with us for Deserted Island at the end, if you can stay with us, you guys could guess too, because you both know some of these authors. They are people we've had on the show before, and some of them are very, very literary choices, but it should be fun. So let's start with the most important thing, Michael Sands, which is how a lot of people are surviving the social distancing, and that is going to Calvert-Woodley and picking up some wonderful wine and booze and everything else. How are you doing? How's the family doing? Most importantly, how's your dad, Ed Sands, doing at Calvert-Woodley?
We're doing well, thank you. It's a bit of a paradox to be socially distancing, but to be busier than we have been in a while. So it's a little crazy, but we did recently on Thursday, we started to have no customers in the store. So we've done parking lot pickups and delivery. So it's still busy. People, we went online order only, and we actually closed the store today, and we're going to close on Sundays and Mondays moving forward so that we can give our employees a little bit of a break and keep everybody safe and still be able to serve people. But we have the last time I checked a few minutes ago, that it was over 150 online orders. So tomorrow will be a little crazy, but we're doing well.
You and your family have been in this business for a long time. So you were around during 9/11, you were around during 2008 recession. Have you ever seen anything like this? Have you ever experienced anything like this?
Not even close. The day, I think, all my days are running together a little bit. It was about a week and a half ago when, it was on a Wednesday night when Trump made his speech and, the NBA shut down their season. That seems to me to be the sort of delineating line. And that next day, we were up about 60%, and we still had, you know, quote unquote, regular business with people coming in the store, and we were up 60% and the next day and the next day and the next day. And I've never seen anything like it. It was really, really unbelievable. And then we closed the store to customers about four days ago, and it's continued. I've never seen anything like it.
Wow. So how do you take care of, I mean, many of your employees, people listening to this show know I rave about Capital Woodley all the time. It's like your store. It is the most knowledgeable staff. They love seeing people walk in. They love helping you figure out what you need, what you want, your wine, your cheese, et cetera. Many of your employees have been with you for a long time. How are you taking care of them?
Well, we have a lot of longtime employees, as you mentioned, and you mentioned some of them in the department. And we have asked 6 or 7 people to stay home because they're in an age group that has been determined to be the most vulnerable. And I'm laughing because I can't even get them to stay home. I'm getting texts from them saying, I want to come in, I want to help. I've had people walk in the store, including one of them yesterday, just walked in and said, I want to help. I can't stay home. Like, you got to go home. And I had another guy come up to my office right before closing yesterday, and he said, I'll see you on Tuesday. And I said, why? No, you won't. And he's like, yes, I want to come in. Like, it's really unbelievable, but I've never seen anything like it. I don't even know what to say. But we're trying to limit the number of people that are in the store and the contactless pickup and, you know, things like that, that we're doing the best we can. I have a friend in the medical supplies company who's got some really strong hospital grade, you know, stuff and wipes, and obviously do all that we can to keep the actual store safe. But the employees have been amazing. So we're just doing the best we can.
Well, take care of you, take care of your dad, Ed Sands. I think it's interesting that just a few weeks ago, Ed Sands turned the store over to you completely. I think Ed may have known something that we all didn't know, but for another day. But take care of everybody. But let me get you out on this. What's the phone number to call? If people want to call you guys and place orders, which they can still, in a couple of days, come by, pick it up outside the store, right?
Yes, we're limited on the phones. It's a lot more challenging. So we're asking everyone to place online orders.
And go for it. Calvert, where do they go?
CalvertWork.com. And they come to pick up their orders. I mean, we're asking for people to give us 24 hours before they come pick up their order. But if they get to the parking lot, they can then call 202-966-4400. And we will bring their order outside to them and stick it in their trunk. So it's completely no contact or contactless.
Okay.
But just a quick line. I was talking to my dad the other day, and I asked him if he wanted the store back, and he said, no thanks. So,
smart man. Okay, take care of him. Take care of yourself. Take care of all those wonderful people at Calvert Woodley, and we will talk to you soon. Okay, Michael? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having me. Thank you.
Okay, now you can go brush your hair. David, you still with us?
I am.
Good. What are you drinking? I'm drinking a lovely Italian red from Calvert Woodley.
I have I'm a Shiraz whore, so that's what I do. I'm not sure exactly where this Shiraz is from. I was in my angst to find toilet paper today. I was just racing through stores, and I went to one that sold booze, and I was like, wow, booze, and I just jumped on it, and it was next to the Aldi in Silver Spring, if that helps anyone. I'm not sure that narrows it down for people. But
a few weeks ago, when we started to get hints of these things, and I did go around to some stores, and I did not buy the stores out, but I stocked up on some things like toilet paper and paper towels and some of the other basics, and someone to whom I'm related by marriage totally ridiculed me. What are you doing? We don't have room for that. Totally ridiculed me. And now on March 23rd, we are now having conversations with our family and extended family. Okay, we need to be careful. We need to be careful about the stockpile because there's not a lot out there. So, David, how are you? You're healthy, your family, everybody healthy so far?
So far, so good. My concern is we're fine. Our two boys are home. They're going to be home the rest of the year, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
I can't imagine they're going to open the schools back up. And it's fine. They're teenagers, so they're on their computer all the time anyway. They're not really, you know, in that sense, it's not all that different from that for them. I like that they are still engaging with their friends from school online. Certainly no play dates or anything like that, obviously. No pizza parties, no anything, no contact. But so far, look, it's been a week. I mean, it's not like we spent 3 years doing this, you know, so But so far, so good. My concern is with my dad, who's 92. And, you know, you're trying to weigh the very kind of limited social engagements he still has with the need to not do that, right? So, you know, it's a back and forth that we're having about that. And it's hard because, you know, as your parents age, their world tends to get smaller and smaller, and their footprint tends to get smaller and smaller. So you have to weigh the fact that they don't really go to many places but they still do go to one or two places, and is it worth the risk? So it's a debate we're continuing to have. But, you know, I told somebody this afternoon, you know, really, if this is the hardest thing that we have to do, I mean, come on. Seriously. People out there with no work right now and who don't have any prospects of working. And I'm doing okay. Our business is okay right now. So I can't really complain about too much.
Talk about the business. Talk about at the very time that all of us who are hopefully appropriately socially distancing would love to be reading about sports. You know, my family and I had a long planned family. Again, we're not feeling sorry for ourselves. We're very lucky. But we were going to be in Vegas last week, all enjoying the first opening rounds of March Madness.
Right.
What does a company like The Athletic do when there's nothing to cover?
Well, we have to reimagine it. We've spent a lot of time over the last 3 weeks kind of doing some real thinking about how we're going to cover a sports world where there's no live sports events going on. So, you know,
but there's horse racing. I know the horse racing is good for The Athletic, David. So the four horses are being forced to run around the track.
Correct.
We can do that.
And you know, look, every story is a good story. So I'm not turning down anything right now. Yeah. It's tough. It's tough to kind of think about how you do this and what you want to emphasize. And, you know, I don't want to be viewed as grandpa telling stories by the campfire about the way it used to be 20 years ago and 30 years ago. But, you know, there is some demand, I think. There is some interest in that because it just makes people feel normal, you know, to hear somebody talking about sports. So we're doing things like that. We're doing retrospectives. We just did a big piece. Michael Lee and I, who's a writer for us, did a big piece. Last week was the 25th anniversary of Michael Jordan's return to the NBA. So we did a big piece on that. So we're doing things like that. We're engaging with our fans. We're doing, you know, best athlete ever. We're doing a thing right now, the best athlete ever out of the DC Baltimore area. We're a professional athlete.
Right.
And so we're asking fans to engage and do a lot of voting, and they are so far. So we're trying to make the most out of a tough situation. But again, as I keep coming back to, my gosh, I have it so much easier than 95 to 98% of all the people roaming the earth right now. So it's you know, it's challenging, but, you know,
you're absolutely right. This really, you like to say it. Because, you know, if you have your health, that's all that matters. If you and your family are, that's all that matters. And this really brings that home. And it really is true. But in the category of from sublime to ridiculous, my husband, Brian, who is the biggest Caps fan in the family, has taken to rewatching many old Caps games.
Oh, sure.
But sitting there and watching and because he screams a lot, screaming as if it was a real game, as if he didn't know the outcome. It's been spectacular. It's been spectacular. All right. Let's, talking about where this really hits home, let's bring in Lilia if we can. Lilia Nebaker, who many of you know listening to the show, we have been at her wonderful place, One More Page Books in Arlington. We've taped a show there with Will Haygood. Great guy, great book about a Columbus high school team. And just as local independent bookstores were really starting to take off and really cover some ground and get some wonderful businesses going and becoming wonderful, wonderful members of the community, this hits. And it's been really tough. Lilia, thanks for joining us. I know it has been a crazy couple of weeks for you. So we appreciate your joining us here. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us how the staff there is doing. And what are you guys doing these days? I know you can't let people come in and see your great book selection, see the wine, see the chocolate. But tell us what you're doing these days to keep things going.
Thank you so much for having me on. Yeah, it's been a really, it's been an adjustment for us, I think, just because it's completely changes the way that we are doing business, essentially. And we've been really lucky in that we've had we have a really good website that can facilitate online orders. So that's essentially what we've been directing people to, online orders, phone orders, you know, and trying to support us remotely. So we're doing a curbside pickup, you know, where we'll have people place an order, and then when we tell them we're ready, you know, they come up and we, you know, give it to them outside, so they're not coming into the store. And I think the for me, you know, as the person who is a book buyer, I'm used to buying books for us to have in the store for people to come in and see, and so it's really disorienting for me to adjust to sort of, you know, nobody's coming in to look at these books, so how do we get the books to them to show them what we have and to showcase the ones that are staff picks or the ones that might be especially good for, you know, this time and how everybody's feeling. So we're trying to update our website a little bit to get that going and to get it easier, so it's more of a, you know, closer to the bookstore experience with the mm-hmm. with the online remote situation. But we've been the phone has been ringing constantly since last week. I think we're all a little, which is, you know, fantastic. It's a great problem to have, yeah. But we're not used to being able to have to sort of feel that. We only have one phone line, so it's just, you know, it's really funny trying to like, oh hey, can I, you know, get your credit card number? Oh beep, sorry, somebody else is calling in. Can you tell me one more time? So. We are very lucky to be able to sell wine over the phone now. I mean, you know, people can call and pay for it and then just drive up and pick it up. We were really worried. We were like, oh no, like, are we going to be able to keep selling the wine and the chocolate? Because those aren't up online. Yeah. But we are still able to sell those as well as the books, which are important. And I think people are really, you know, especially with kids home, are really looking to find new books, yeah. find ways to sort of escape or to learn or to, you know, just kind of, focus on reading now that there are limited options for what else we can do. So that's been great.
Is it true? I read somewhere a couple of days ago that one of the biggest upticks in books, book purchases are kids' books. Have you guys experienced that?
I would say of our orders over the last, and you know, in recent weeks, I think it's been fairly even for us uh-huh. in terms of, I don't think I would say that kids' books have increased more so than adult books.
Okay.
Just in our, you know, community group of readers. But there is definitely a lot of demand for those. I would say jigsaw puzzles are the thing we've seen the biggest increase in.
Interesting.
Right before we knocked off three last weekend, and right before we started, I checked in with you guys. I went and got what I think is the last 1,000-piece jigsaw puzzle in the tri-state area. And
I think you're right.
I might have had to elbow a few people out for it, because anybody can get the 200-piece ones, but the 1,000-piece ones are really,
Who I tried to sell somebody
jigsaw puzzle business.
We only had one or 2,000-piece left ones. I was like, you know, you can tape together these 2 500-piece puzzles. Amanda came up with that innovation. And you know, you got to do what you got to do, but we're trying to keep those in stock as best we can. But the books as well. I mean, it's hard for us to keep up with all the orders, which is again a great problem
That's a great problem to have. But still, you guys were so big on hosting book clubs there and terrific author readings and things like that. Do you see where you can move into doing some of those virtually as well?
Yes, we are. I mean, I think that's such a big part of our identity is this community meeting place, and with people not able to meet. We're trying to adjust and to figure out a way to maintain that sense of being together without being physically together. One of our book clubs has already jumped onto Zoom and they're meeting that way. And I wasn't familiar with Zoom, but I hear it's a great platform in terms of being able to have a virtual meeting with people. And we're doing some events that are completely online and virtual as well coming up. I think Friday is one of our first ones. Jen DeLuca will be with us. Spearheading that, so I'll have to double check on the date, but we're trying to keep up on our social media in terms of updating people with what changes we're making and how that's going to come into effect. So we are planning some other virtual events coming up, and I think there's another one in the first week of April that was supposed to be an in-store event that we're going to try to make mm-hmm. into sort of like a, you know, maybe Instagram Live or maybe you know, some other platform that we can all have people sort of hear an author speak and talk to them without us all being here at the store.
Yeah, it's the new normal, which is bizarre, but it's the new normal.
It
for the
is,
time being.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, Lily, thank you so much. I know you're swamped. So if you need to go, I understand. But if you want to mute and while we talk to Zach, or if you want to talk to Zach too, that'd be fine. And then come back for our Deserted Island segment. We'd love to have you.
Sure thing. Thank you so much. I'm excited to hear Zach. He was supposed to be at an event that we had to cancel. So hi, Zach.
Oh, perfect. All right. So Zach, you're on. Thank you so much for joining us. As we've done this show for the last however many, I quit counting.
I know.
Over 50.
We're in your 60 now, right?
We're 60, which is the new 40. I kept saying, I've been really happy that we've had a really diverse portfolio of featured authors on, but every time I'm in some cool hip place, like One More Page Books in Arlington, 2200 Northwest Moreland, where you can't go now, but you can go onto their website and order books. I'd say, we need a YA author. We need a YA author because we need to be cool and hip. And they uniformly said, get Zach Smedley. So we finally got Zach Smedley. First of all, where are you, and are you healthy, and are you socially distancing from everybody?
Yes, I am perfectly healthy and socially distancing. I'm in my bedroom currently, which is in Maryland, about, I want to say like 20 miles north of DC. So I'm not super far from you guys.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So is Brian Lamb, my favorite person ever. Brian Lamb of C-SPAN always likes to say when he first meets somebody, which our listeners are first meeting you, where are you from? What do you want to be when you grow up, when you grew up? Those kinds of things. Where are you from originally?
A little town in Southern Maryland called St. Mary's County.
Totally. Yeah,
of course. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, I grew up there, and then I went to UMBC for chemical engineering, and I pretty much always wanted to be a chemical engineer growing up, and now I am.
Okay, well, let's just stop there for a second. David, we have had our authors. We love hearing the backstory on authors, and we've had wannabe astronauts, lawyers. There are more failed or lawyers who have retired to then become writers. Somebody who was a clown. They come from all different walks of life. Chemical engineer, we've never had. Why did you want to be a chemical engineer, and why did you become one?
Well, as for the engineering part, that's just sort of in my blood. I love designing, building, and creating stuff. So, like, I mean, just this afternoon, I passed time by setting up a home media server on a spare Raspberry Pi and routing that through, like, a Flex interface and all that, just to organize my
stuff. Sure, sure. So did I.
I didn't understand anything you just said, Zach.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, and I mean, I guess part of it is, like, I wouldn't have known a lot of that lingo, like, 2 weeks ago. It's more, I like taking on projects and sort of throwing them together and stuff. So, like, I do a lot of furniture building, some electronics design, and I just like creating stuff, which obviously extends to books. So engineering and problem solving has always sort of been in my blood, and my dad is an engineer and my mom is a music teacher, so I sort of got both the creative gene and the engineering gene. And then
I already hate you, but go ahead.
Perfect. Yeah, and then as for the chemical stuff, I'm maybe supposed to have some big backstory about how chemistry changed my life, but quite frankly, I just really liked chemistry class, and I had a really, really great chemistry teacher who's actually mentioned in the acknowledgement section of my book. She made me promise to do that when she found out that I'd been writing a book during class in the last grade. And so she made me promise to put her in the acknowledgments whenever it got published. So then I did.
Good for you. So as a chemistry person, do you have thoughts on how to tackle coronavirus going forward?
It's funny you ask. I can't tell you where I work. I can't tell you where I work, but I work as an engineer, and at work we were recently asked to start designing respirators that could potentially be used in like hospitals for emergency situations, which I'm certainly not planning to like reinvent the wheel on that or anything, but that is currently what I am looking at, is just respirator design. And I actually spent yesterday afternoon drawing up rough blueprints of like, how would I potentially build one if I had to do it in like an hour and MacGyver the situation and maybe route the interface through like a cheap like GUI window on a Raspberry Pi or Arduino or something like that. So
yes, exactly. Something like that, right?
Sorry
about that. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, sure.
That's
what I don't mean to sound like all that. With all that.
I feel like we should stop now and just let you get back to that, because it's far more important to talk to these people. Holy cow. Okay. So somebody walked away with my book, Deposing Nathan, which is your wonderful, wonderful book. Give us the CNN head. I could do it, but I want you in your own words. Give us the CNN headlines version of the plot of Deposing Nathan.
Ooh, I haven't practiced this in a few months. It's about...
Because you're busy building respirators, which again is hard.
You're like woodworking, like Harrison Ford. That's amazing. It's unbelievable.
It's about a boy who has to give a legal statement about how and why he was stabbed by his best friend. And more specifically, he has to testify about how the two met and then ultimately fell apart. And it includes a lot of themes of religion versus sexuality.
And then it gets complicated. You make it sound so simple, and then it gets complicated. But first of all, I recommend to anybody listening to the show, whenever we have authors on, I, of course, if they have websites, I look at the websites, I look at all the notes from the publishers, I look at interviews. And usually the author websites are terrible. They're usually just boring, and they don't have much there. They don't tell you much. Zach's website is really, really good. And it, I think it reveals a lot about him and about what he was trying to do with this book. So Zach, you said this is the book, that Deposing Nathan is the book you wanted to write versus the book you thought you should write. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. So for years, in high school, I wrote a series of fantasy books that were just hilariously awful, like should never see the light of day. I wrote 15 of them throughout my 4 years in high school. I started when I was in eighth grade, and I started querying them my senior year of high school, which they rightly got unanimously rejected. And then in college, as I was entering college, I was feeling very sad and nostalgic about leaving behind everyone in high school. So I decided to write a contemporary YA about senior year of high school and making that transition. And so I spent most of college attempting to query that. And I got a lot of partial requests or full requests and a few R&Rs, but all of them fell through.
And querying means you send it to publishers saying, please publish this book, correct?
Technically, I sent them to agents saying, please get publishers to publish this book. So yeah, okay. Same thing. Basically junior year, I just gave up on writing, as it seems every published author has done at some point. And it wasn't that I gave it up completely. It was that I didn't want to do it anymore. So I took a year off. And during that year, I sort of got into the mode of, well, if I just am not worried about any standards anymore and could just throw whatever I want down on paper, maybe I could write this unpublishable book that's like very pro-LGBT, but also very pro-religion, because I wasn't really seeing all, or dare I say, any of that in YA literature. There's not really a lot of LGBT that includes religion in a positive light, and there's not a lot of religious books that include the LGBT themes in a positive light. And so I basically wanted to write a book that says, hey, you can be both if you would like. And I grew up a huge fan of Aaron Sorkin, and I really like Sorkin dialogue. For those unfamiliar, he did The Newsroom, The West Wing, The Social Network. And so I sort of mashed all those together to write this really loud, argumentative book that apparently was somewhat publishable despite my best efforts to make it not so. So then I queried that during my senior year of college, and I found my agent and she found a publisher. Now here we are.
So great. Okay. So we'll come back to Aaron Sorkin, but David, you're a writer, you're a beautiful writer. But talk about the challenges or the conflict of writing about what you want to write about versus what you think you should write about. Because that's got to be a decision you guys make every day at The Athletic and in your life.
Yeah, but that's you know, it's always what every first author is told, right? Write what you know, right? I mean, that's kind of a cliche, but I'm sure it's there. And so you tend to write about things that you're comfortable writing about because you have more familiarity with them. And I'm sure, Zach, you know, you may have wrestled with this. I don't know. I'm curious. Like, did this come out of you because you didn't see this anywhere else? Or was this something you just wanted to write about? Or was it both?
Both. It was, I wanted to write about it because I wasn't seeing it anywhere. I think one thing that surprises a lot of interviewers is I never went through anything like what my main character goes through at all.
Right.
I'm very.
I just say that. I'm going to come back on that too. But go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. It's, well,
it's, no stabbings of any kind.
Oh no. yeah. Well, not only that, but no struggle between religion and sexuality at all. Just you know, when I say that, I'm not like downplaying anything. I'm not hiding it. It just never happened, you know, with me. But I saw it happen to a lot of other folks. And for as much diversity as there was in the YA genre, I just couldn't find any text that talked about, you know, Christianity in a positive light. And it's very easy to say, you know, yeah, I wonder why. It's like, it's, I understand the hesitation to do that, but, I set to work and I started doing a lot of research for folks that have wrestled with, religion versus sexuality, specifically Christianity versus sexuality. And, I spent many hours listening to and reading a lot of interviews and doing a few of my own so that I could accurately portray someone who's unironically religious, but then also unironically LGBT. And I am told I did a reasonably good job, but I will never know for sure because honestly, my main character, I don't really follow his own logic, if that makes sense. Like he rationalizes a lot of stuff that to me is just not, you know, I don't understand where it's coming from, but I did my best to write it in a way that a lot of other people would relate to.
I love the expression unironically, and that's what I thought reading it. And I swear to God, everybody who's listening to this, again, we'll get to this angels and demons, what you should be reading during coronavirus and what we are reading. And I read this and I didn't stop reading it until I was done. And then I read it again. And as David knows, I have some very hard feelings about religion, having been raised in a Catholic family for many years, but I found myself intrigued by the conversation, and it was very Aaron Sorkin like. It was very, oh, I may not like this person, but the way they're talking about this, the way they're describing their feelings, the way they're addressing the situation, it's fascinating. It was absolutely fascinating. And I still don't quite believe you keep saying this is not autobiographical, you didn't have these feelings, because it's so well done, it's so well written. I think, how could anybody do that if they didn't actually experience it themselves?
Yeah. No, you know what it was, is I grew up thinking I was totally straight for the first 21 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And this should tell you how big St. Mary's County is. I had never heard the word bisexual until I got to college. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, oh, that sounds like me. And I let it marinate for 10 days and then came out to everyone. Mm-hmm. And that was it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so I guess that was the one factor, is I wanted to write a book that loudly just discusses that bisexuality exists, which is where those conversations come from, where the two are debating, you know, does it exist? And obviously it does. Okay, what does it look like? What can it look like? What does the label really mean? You know, and I wasn't even setting out to answer those questions, because as arrogant and self-centered as I can be, I also recognize that I'm in my early 20s and don't know everything about how the world works, or even most things about how the world works. So I tried to just pose a lot of questions and leave people to find their own answers.
Yeah. You dedicated the book to your parents. Was this a good read, a challenging read? When they read the book, did they have questions for you?
They were horrified at the language. My parents are the two sweetest, loveliest people on earth, and there's no two people I love more. But their cursing pretty much never occurred in my house growing up, certainly not by me at least. So I warned them when I gave them the book. I was like, this is, you know, different than my little fantasy novels in high school. This is like R-rated. And my mom was like, I mean, I've heard it all before. And then I came out of my room the next morning. This was during summer. I came out of my room the next morning and I saw her with the manuscript in her lap, and she was not smiling. And I was like, hey. And she was just like, hey. And then she like got back to it, and I was like, oh, she hates it. And it's funny because I tell this story on my website, but she read it after I had a slight dip in my querying. So senior year, I started querying it. I got some bites. And then between graduating and the fact that most of those dissolved and didn't result in offers, I said to myself, well, something's wrong with the manuscript, so I should take a couple more years and work on it. And my mom, after she read it, she took me out to breakfast. I think the first thing she said is, she said, I'm a little horrified at the language. But she said, this is an incredibly important book, so I want you to promise me you're going to send it to the rest of your agents on your list this week. And so I did. And then one of them made me an offer.
Good mom. That's great. Mom's the best.
Oh my God. My mom, my mom is the best mom in the world, and I'll fight all the other moms on that one.
1,000 years to go. One time, Mary Madeline, James Carville, Mary Madeline and I were talking back and forth one day in the ill-fated Bush Quail campaign, 1992. And bad things were happening, and she's on a bad cell phone in D.C. This is in the days when the cell phones were as big as a car, and I'm traveling with then Bush 41, and we were having conversations throughout the day, and we were saying horrifically bad things about everybody we worked with, everybody we worked for, using every word you have ever heard under the sun, and 95,000 more. And long story short, an enterprising reporter for the Charleston, South Carolina Gazette, or whatever it was called, the Gazette Courier or something like that, David, listens to a police scanner all the time. And his police scanner picked up our phone calls. And he listened to them all day long. And at the end of the day, he called to get some comment on this conversation. And my first thought, to your point, wasn't, oh, I'm going to be fired. It's like, get me out of this campaign. I want to be fired. I could not care less about that. If my parents read in a newspaper account, because it would get picked up by everybody, the language I used, they would have completely disowned me. Anything else would be fine. You know, trashing everybody on the campaign with the language. So I completely appreciate that. Okay, I'm going to get you out with this because, again, we don't have enough time. Neely has got to get back and sell some more books at the store. But you keep I've read interviews. I've read what you have on your website. I really recommend your website. But you say Deposing Nathan, which is a fabulous book, is not autobiographical. I'm going to read something from your own website, and you say, it's a book that's going to piss a lot of people off and hopefully help a lot of others. And it's full of more truth than I've ever put into one place before. And oh my God, am I so scared? And oh my God, am I so ready? I'm ready for everyone to see who I am. I'm ready for all of it. So that's what you said. What do you want people to know about you?
Oh boy, that's a big question.
See, because only those of us on our little Skype thing that Claude has put together can see each other. He all of a sudden went into defensive mode there. Come on.
I could answer this 1,000 ways, but I'll choose this one because I'm in the throes of writing my second book, and that's causing a very large personal crisis that I'm sure I will talk about endlessly when and if this god-awful thing ever makes it out into the world. But
it's just, can I just interrupt for a second? David's heard me 1,000 times. It's so fun. David has covered sports. He's the best covering sports. And athletes often talk about, boy, I'm so lucky to get to do what I'm doing and the joy of it. And people in lots of walks of life talk about, yeah, it's hard or this was challenging, but I love what I do. I've never heard a writer go, I love this. They talk about how hard it is. They talk about how painful it is. But go ahead. Talk about your upcoming pain.
Well, so let me say this. A lot of authors in this industry, pretty much all of whom are smarter than me and have a better business plan than me, exist to fill quotas and build their platform. They write books year after year to build their audience and to capitalize on their brands and to become more well-known to the world. And that is not what I am here to do. In fact, when my agent called me to talk about writing another book last summer, I told her I wasn't writing any more books because I had managed to do a good story once with this one. And if another good story finds me in 5 or 10 years, then I will write that one. But up until that time, I will not be doing any writing motivated in any part by a desire for platform relevancy, career building, audience building, and certainly not for a paycheck. And I struggle to understand folks who so easily give up that balance and just mindlessly crank out stuff that is not coming entirely from a place of the heart just to have a career. And in probably about 10 years, I'm going to realize how foolish I currently sound. And I'm going to realize that all those other authors I am gently criticizing had it right the whole time. And like every young person, I'll have learned my lesson the hard way. But for now, I'll go on record saying that's what I am here for. I'm here to reject any model of business making. So I guess my point is my next book will not come out until it's ready, which could be a while. And you, I guess for better or for worse, should not expect to see a lot of me on shelves. I'm here to write a few works that I feel truly define what I want to say, rather than just cranking out my 11th or 12th one that says the same thing or worse, says nothing at all, just for capitalizing on entertainment value, or the worst sin of all, pandering and patronizing teenagers because you think that any love triangle can make it to number one of the New York Times bestseller list.
Wow. David, what do you think?
I think that's an that's a very appropriate thing for someone your age to believe. And it's fine. It's what we all believed at that age. It's just that life kind of gets in the way sometimes.
No, yeah.
Life takes you in other directions, you know?
Yeah. And also, I'll attach the enormous asterisk of I am not like cementing myself in any of these beliefs and saying that I am right and others are wrong and I need to lecture everyone on how to write a book. You know, this is just where I'm at in life. And my second book, clearly I am working on it, even though I haven't found the story yet. So clearly I am surrendering to that bounce a little bit and I am reevaluating just, I mean, I look the part here, but I'm like quite young. I wrote Deposing Nathan when I was 19. So I'm still at the age where I'm still like figuring out what music I like and I'm still catching up on like classic movies that most people have seen. So I'm still finding my voice in that sense. And I'm certainly still finding my voice in terms of what kind of, you know, person I want to carry myself as. And I'm sure in 5 or 10 years, I'll see myself now as an arrogant little jerk, but,
No, just the opposite.
Yes, it is the exact opposite. You're right.
Yeah, and in the business world, if you say to somebody, you know, the widget maker, you know, what's your goal here? And they say, well, we want to sell more widgets than anybody else. Well, inevitably they fail. But if somebody says, no, I want to build the widget that fills this need, it's more about filling the need. And then ultimately it can be very, very successful. So,
yeah. I will say, to be crystal clear, my publisher and agent have both been phenomenal on this front. And what my agent said to officially get me back in the saddle, however miserable it may be to, you know, try and find my own story is she said, I'm not trying to, you know, turn you into an assembly line and just crank out meaningless stuff. But she said, I believe that you do have other stories living in you that do fit that description of, you know, your next big thing. And I want you to still have a platform and a voice to tell those stories. And in the interim, if you do so, if you write other books simply for the purpose of, you know, writing your next book, she said, I believe you can also still inject that with purpose and heart and meaning and everything you are looking to inject into your books. And I think she's right.
I think that sounds like a very smart person and you should listen to her advice. And that's I would love to read your next book.
We will read your next book.
Yeah. And really everybody, I know there's so much going on right now and people have so many challenges. I deeply appreciate, but there's one of the great things we can do right now in all this is a little bit more extra time and you can read. And I think you should read Deposing Nathan. It's a coming of age story. It's a uniquely 21st century coming of age story. And it, you know, I tend to think at my age, I figured everything out and it caused me to go, whoa, maybe I haven't. I need to think about things differently. It's just remarkable. And then to put the very commercial, whatever, it's Aaron Sorkin-like, which is a great compliment. That it's like it just goes so fast. And I read it without stopping, and then I went and read it again because I wanted to go, I'm gonna go back and read that conversation. It's really fabulous. I am so glad you did it. I think it was probably more of a challenge than you admit. I'm just guessing it was more of a personal challenge than you admit, but I'm glad you did it and thank you. And
thank you.
This is really unfair. I'm going to ask you to stay with us for Deserted Island. I'm watching Lilia, and she's selling books. I am watching her in the store.
Moving merchandise.
She is selling moving merchandise. Yeah. But we're going to move to Deserted Island. Now, Zach, normally Deserted Island is, we have some theme. It might be, you know, something happened on this particular day or whatever, and we recommend books. But this one is what I'm calling Angels and Demons, and that is because I kept thinking to myself, it's kind of like backing way up.
first time I was pregnant, I thought to myself, when this kid arrives, I'm going to have so much free time on my hands, which is a joke. And I had a long list of David. And I had this long list of things I was going to do and long list of books I was going to read, you know, really good, important books. Never. But I, same thing now with coronavirus, I'm thinking, okay, here are things I should read versus things I am reading, which is, you know, everything becomes catastrophic in my life. So it became Angels and Demons. So for instance, I should be reading Eric Larson's The Splendid and the Vile, which has been on my bedstand for a while. Lelia just made a face. It's really good. It's Churchill wearing his bathrobe, right? But I'm reading Philippa Gregory's The White Queen, which I've read two times before, does not need to be read again. So I reached out to some of our authors who have been on before, I have to get my papers, and said, okay, if you were going to do Angels and Demons, what are books you should be reading versus books that you want to be reading? And again, this is unfair to David, but I'm going to do it to him anyhow. And Lelia, you know some of these. Zach, you probably know none of these, but these are people who've been on this show before.
Yeah.
So here's the first one, and then you won't get it, David, so I'll give you some hints. But Lelia, you can jump in because you know this person too. So he had several ideas. I asked for two, and these people gave me 18. But this one, he, it's a he, says you should read Flaubert's Madame Bovary, which you pretended to read in college, but you will read Laura Zygmunt's new comic novel, Separation Anxiety, about a woman who starts wearing her dog in a baby sling. Now that you've got extra time, you should read the old English classic Beowulf, but you will read the hot modern day version of Beowulf by Maria Headley called The Mere Wife. Mere is M-E-R-E. Lily is taking notes and Googling things right now, I can tell.
Yeah, I was going to do that.
I'm only taking notes. I'm not using Google.
In the spirit of this contest.
Yeah. You should read Ocean Vuong's, am I pronouncing that correctly, Lelia?
I think so. That's how I've heard it.
Yeah. Tragic. I tried to get him on the show. He's not been on so far. Tragic autobiographical novel, On Earth We Are Briefly Gorgeous, but you will read Andrew Sean Greer's hilarious autobiographical novel, Less. So,
are
David.
Are you asking me who recommended
those? Yeah, can you guess? He's been on the show. He's actually been on the show twice. Once as a, you know, kind of featured person, and then he came on once randomly, like when somebody didn't show up and Liz Clark was there. And
oh gosh, you're taxing.
He's very funny. He's very funny. He's not really an author per se.
Not an author per se, huh? Oh gosh,
but very involved in the book world.
I'm such short material here, Tor.
Totally hip video.
Oh, the Ron.
Is ding, Ron? Ding 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 ding. Ron Charles.
Yes.
If you did not see his St. Patrick's Day videos.
I did not. I got to go
back and look at them. Okay, spectacular. Okay, David kind of gets a point. Kind of not.
I get a point. Give me a half a point.
Half a point. Yeah. Okay, this one, and I know this person has been in your store, Lelia. That is One More Page Books in Arlington.
No pressure.
Okay, Angels. And by the way, you ask people simple questions. I reached out to some of our previous authors. Simple questions. Here's the deal. 18 questions in response. Like, give it a rest, guys. Get a glass of wine from Calvert Woodley. Okay, this one, Angels, interestingly, On Earth We're Briefly Gorgeous by Ocean Vuong, or Where Reasons End by Yoon Lee. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. And then Devils, Eye the Jury by Mickey Spillane. Spectacular. And as this person says, not a wasted moment. Or the Captain Underpants series. I kept reading these long after my kids stopped. He's been in your store. He was one of our early ones, David.
Oh,
and I'll give you a hint. Historical fiction. And I guess. Lily gets to guess first.
Oh, go ahead.
This is probably wrong, but I'm going to say Lou Baird.
Yay! Yes, Lou Baird.
How about that?
Fabulous.
According to
she gets
Lincoln,
a full point. In fact, give her the half point that I had, so she gets a point and a half.
No, you keep your half point. You'll need it later.
1 point to half point. Zach is sitting there going, why am I on this show? Why am I
here? Oh, no.
I really have a lot better things to do than listen to these people talk.
I do not. You have to be for as long as you want.
Okay. Okay. All right, this one, Pulitzer Prize winner that was on our show. We've had a few Pulitzer Prize winners.
That's true.
Angels, books you should be reading right now. The Great Influenza by John M. Barrie, an illuminating account of the 1980 pandemic. The Hot Zone by Richard Preston, a scary one on Ebola. Like the first one wasn't scary.
Right.
Devils, and he, again, the qualifiers from these people, my God, not really, really guilty pleasures, but the two most absorbing books of fiction I happened to read this year, Perrin, which is rare for me. I'm a nonfiction guy, were Golden Hill by Frances Spufford, S-P-U-F-F-O-R-D, and News of the World by Paulette Giles, both utterly engrossing books that you can lose yourself in and learn about two interesting times and places. The first about old New York in the 1740s when a mysterious Brit arrives and shakes up the old establishment. And the second about Texas during Reconstruction when a virtuous old captain takes a young girl kidnapped by the Indians back to her relatives. Both have great character settings and plots. Now, he is very methodical in how he describes these books, which should be a hint.
I'm going to go David Marinus. Yes!
Awesome! Okay, point and a half. Yes. That is terrific. Okay. All right. So this is how we're going to get everybody out. And we can do it in whatever order you want. Zach, we'll go first because you've been sitting there doing nothing in this segment. So if you could read any book you wanted to read. No, let's start with Angel. A book you should be reading right now with all your free downtime, even though you're building respirators. And why are you still on this show? Versus guilty pleasure book.
Oh, gosh. Well, for a book that I should be reading, I'll go with anything on my TBR shelf. And there are quite literally 32 titles that I've been meaning to read. I'm going to go with Like a Love Story by Abdi. Oh, I'm going to butcher it. Nasium, I want to say is his name.
Sure.
I've heard that one's great. As for a book that I want to be reading, probably a reread of I'll Give You the Sun by Jandy Nelson.
Nice. Okay, good. All right, Lilia.
It's Invisible Women, Data Bias in a World Designed for Men. The author is Caroline Criado Perez, and it's very dense and it's very, you know, reading about system, like patriarchy and the statistics of it are not the most uplifting. So I think I put it down a little bit just in favor of something a little bit lighter. So now I am reading an advanced reader copy of Alexis Hall's upcoming Boyfriend Material, which the dialogue, the narrator's voice is so funny. And it's making me laugh. I'm loving it. It's a fun romance, just like beautiful with some British, humor. Highly recommend you pre-order it from One More Page Books. Thank you.
Perfect. David?
Thanks. I'm trying to think of an angel book. I guess about a pandemic right now is good reading. You should be studying up on this.
Too late.
Yeah, it's too late. We're in the mitigating phase now, I've been told. But I'm desperate right now to read about people who kind of persevered and overcame and have managed to kind of get through a very difficult project or time in their lives or anything like that. So, being a nonfiction baby as I am, the Wright Brothers biography by David McCullough is something that is just phenomenal. I can't even fathom as much as I've read it. And I just don't know how you possibly could have gotten to where they got in terms of this could work, right?
Yeah.
We could do this.
As an engineer, I completely agree.
Yeah, how do you get there? You know, in 1903, how do you get to that point, you know? And it's just the tinkering and the scientific mind and all of those things and the curiosity and thinking beyond your limitations, right? And that's kind of what I think we all need right now, what I certainly need, is people that kind of go beyond their surroundings and find something that is bigger than them, you know? And they certainly didn't know what was going to happen. They just had an idea, but they stuck with it through a lot of trial and error, a lot of error. Yeah. They stuck with it. And I'm just fascinated by people who have the mental toughness to do that. Cause it's very difficult to stick with something when people keep telling you, you're crazy, you're wrong, you're stupid, you're broke. You know, I mean, all those things.
The against all odds quotient. Yeah. I love those. Okay. In that same vein. So everyone should read Eric Larson's book, The Splendid Nevile, which is ostensibly about Churchill, but it's fabulous. It is about people against all odds, just overcoming incredible challenges and doing remarkable things, which is what we need right now. And then it's a big leap, but I keep going back to Playing for Pizza by John Grisham. That's my guilty pleasure. It really is, because it's such a lovely, lovely, it's so unlike John Grisham, and it's such a lovely book, and it is about loving people, and it's about loving food, and it's about loving the moment, which with all the challenges going on right now, and I realize, you know, David, you say it all the time, we're so lucky. We're so lucky compared to 99% of the people out there. But it is a time in which it has allowed us to kind of take a step back and go, what's real, you know, take a deep breath. We're healthy so far. Let's hope all our friends and families and loved ones are healthy. Let's hope those people who need help can get help. But in the meantime, you know, enjoy the fact that, God, we had 5 days of terrific weather here in the first 5 days of this nightmare. And you can just look at these beautiful trees. And Playing for Pizza just has this of-the-moment quality, which I really, really love. So I recommend that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, now here's what I do. I thank David profusely. I know you're busy. Thank you, my friend.
Oh,
take care of that wonderful family. Lelia, get back to selling books, girl. That's what's important. There are plenty of ways to do it. Zach, it's a fabulous book. It's called Deposing Nathan. Everyone should get it. You should get it now via One More Page Books or your favorite local independent bookstore, because we don't play favorites here. Claude, thank you for making everything happen. Michael Sands, we hope everybody over there at Cavill Woodley stays healthy. And I encourage everybody, download the show, review it if you're feeling kindly, share it with your friends. Let us know about ideas, authors, suggestions, all those kinds of things. And we are back. We're going to try to come back next week. And it was with Natwar Gandhi. And if you're from the DMV, you know Natwar. He was the chief financial officer for DC. Yeah. Did remarkable things for the city financially. He has an incredible story. And grew up in a village in India. No electricity, no indoor plumbing, those kinds of things. Got himself educated at an historically black college in the United States. Remarkable guy, and he's got a really, really wonderful book about his story and optimism, which I think we need right now. So now, thank you, everybody. Go wash your hands, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. Thank you, guys.